So today's episode is one that I'm particularly amped about sharing with you all, and it was one that has been in very high demand. Today's guest seems to be quite the popular one, and it's pretty easy to see why. If you haven't heard of him before, today's guest, of course, is Jordan Biggie Steffens. Now, a little bit of background on who Jordan is. He's a highly intelligent, gentle giant who has been competing around the world since he was 15. The first and only Australian weightlifter to win a gold medal in Russia. He has an Australian world record for the most weight carried by a human, which is 610 kilos. And he is currently a coach and strength performer. Now, this episode's probably one of my favorites. I highly recommend for any athletes, entertainers, anyone who has like a high adrenaline job, really tune in and listen to this one, because Biggie goes into the mindset and some of the aspects of peak performance regarding the central nervous system. And this is something that I preach, but I think it's one thing to hear it from like the mindset coach. It's another thing to hear it from an athlete who's out there doing some of the crazy things Jordan's been up to. I want to say a big thanks to Jordan for making the time to sit down and have this very long conversation, because, and as you will hear, Jordan had just had a really long day at work and hadn't had dinner. And so he was actually sitting trying to eat his dinner while having this conversation. So a big thank you for him for making the time to sit and chat with me and to record this for all of you. As I said, highly intelligent, gentle giant. This episode goes down kind of a route that I was very unexpected. We chat history, we chat like strategy, we chat cars, you know, old school cars, architecture. Just an incredibly, I can't preach it enough. Just an incredibly intelligent dude, stellar human being. You know, I'm just gonna let Jordan do the talking. So, without further ado. Episode 77 of the Live Free Experience podcast with Jordan Biggie Steffens. Let's get the show on the road. All right, Biggie, party time.
All right, ready and raring when you are, as I try and eat my schnitzel at the same time we talk.
Go for it. how you been anyway? It's been a while.
How long has it been? Like, honestly, I remember from back in the gym days, you obviously training at a few of the gyms I reckon I was working at almost, or training at similar gyms at the same time. So it's probably been 5+ years. Has to be, doesn't it?
Well, I'm trying to think. The last time I remember seeing you.
Your memory is better than mine.
Well, I don't know. You've got me doubting myself now. The last time I remember seeing you was when I was doing my massage course at the Institute.
Yes, yes.
And that would be minimum 7 years.
So there you go, 5+ years ago.
Jesus.
Oh yeah.
It makes you, and you're having fun.
Just think about it, and then where you're gonna be in another 7 years time from here.
That's scary.
Joe Rogan, baby, that's where you'll be. You'll be the female Joe Rogan, don't you worry.
It's funny you should say that, because that is literally my goal.
You are Joe Rogan?
Yes, I love, sorry, I thought you said you are Joe Rogan. I was like, what? No, yes, I do love Joe Rogan.
I love Joe Rogan.
He's a good egg, that
one.
He's awesome. Cool. So let's start off. Where'd the nickname Biggie come from?
I had that nickname from when I was in school. So I've always been big. Like, I've always been bigger than average, even when I was younger. So I think in year seven, I was nearly 90 kilos. Through high school, I was 6 foot tall. You know, so I was always bigger than everybody else who's school, and the nickname just stuck, I think. It could have been ironic. They could have switched it around and called me Tiny. But no, they called me Biggie. So that's just been a nickname since I was young, just because I was big.
Yep, fair enough. Cool, okay, so we figured out that, yeah, 5+ years, give or take. I know you've been up to a fair bit since. I thought just, and I'm saying this in quotations, I thought just start pulling trains, but I've just found out after you telling me that you've pulled a plane as well.
Yeah, to be honest with you, in the last probably 2015, 2016 onwards has been really quite a change in my career. I've kind of gone from the competitive strongman to the more showy strongman. So I guess early in my career, I was really focusing on winning everything, and that was always the goal when I was younger, was win, 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 win. Now, the older I've gotten, the more I'm trying to give back to the sport, so yeah, or give back to people. So I have a unique ability. I don't have millions of dollars to give to people, but I have a unique ability to be quite entertaining, I like to think.
Yep.
And I'm quite strong. So why not use that as an entertainment form for people that have never seen a strong man up close and personal? I can help raise money for a whole lot of things. Like you said, the plane was to raise money for Cranial Facial Australia, which I actually had no clue when I had the phone call. So I'll give you a little bit of the story behind the plane pull. Is I pulled a train which was 155 tons. It went viral on the news. Like, I made them on in Texas, saw it. It went massive. I was on Sunrise the next day. I had a phone call from Sharon from Cranial Facial Australia. Her comment was, "You really want to pull a plane?" I said, "Yeah, it's been my goal since I was a kid." She's gone, "I'll give you a call." Within 20 minutes, I got a phone call. This was 20 minutes after the Sunrise interview had gone live. And she goes, "I can get you a plane at Adelaide Airport." I'm like, "Jesus. Yeah, righto. Of course you can." I said, "You sure?" She's like, "Yep." Yeah. All right. 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, I was on Adelaide Airport pulling $200 million worth of aircraft. And we raised in 10 days, 20 grand for cranial facial.
Jesus. 10 days.
Sharon is basically like my, almost, she's almost like my PR lady. She's just been so helpful with me, and she's just made my life so much easier behind the scenes. But to do something like that was huge. To get on, as I'm sure you understand and your listeners understand, to get on the tarmac at an airport is huge. It's not easy. Just to get on there. Like, Qantas lent me a plane worth $200 million to do. Like, ridiculous. But just an honor for me to do it and to raise money for an awesome group that I actually had no clue that a fair few people in my life had actually met with Professor David and had cranial facial surgery.
Okay.
Yeah, so that came out of nowhere. So I guess everything happens for a reason. But, yeah, it's been busy and just so much more stuff in that period of time, you know. Travel overseas, competing in Russia, just nonstop. But it, trust me, it's only getting busier.
Yeah.
Only getting busier.
Brilliant. So as I said before we hit record, you're going to have to baby me a little bit because I don't know mega heaps about strongman.
Ask any question and I'll answer it. You just, it doesn't matter what question it is. I don't care. It's no silly questions. Just ask away.
Perfect.
I don't really mind. I've had people ask me, you know, what are the weirdest things I do before doing a competition? You know, what type of underwear you wear? Like, oh, can't trust me. There is not one question you will ask that is weird to me.
Okay, trust perfect. Me. Cool. So how'd you get started then?
So I started strength training when I was 13. I started wrestling at Flinders University.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing wrestling, like, not the stuff you see on TV, the amateur wrestling. I did that for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to win multiple nationals and
so when you say titles, wrestling, you're talking like
Greco-Roman freestyle wrestling, same as what you see at the Olympics.
Yeah, okay, cool, so, cool. Because in my head, I'm like, it could be not like the WWE. Stuff.
No,
like
no,
the,
no.
The, okay, cool, cool.
So yeah, I was training as an Olympic wrestler for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I got scouted in high school for weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
Took up weightlifting. That was where a lot of my time and effort went into.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically from there, when I hit about 17, 18, I got invited to go up and watch a strongman competition. I just wanted to watch it. And they said I should jump in and have a go. Really? I only came up here to watch. Like, no. You'll be right. Jump in, have a crack. All right, no worries. So I jumped in, had a crack, came second in my first time.
There you
never
go.
Touched equipment, never done anything. But I'd been doing weightlifting for a few years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into strongman. And I dabbled between weightlifting and strongman for the past, what am I now, 29, almost 30?
Yep.
So, yeah, what's that, 12, 13 years or so.
So what's the difference then between, just for the listener's sake
yeah.
and somewhat for mine,
mm-hmm.
what's the difference between weightlifting and strongman?
So weightlifting is snatch, clean and jerk, what you see at the Olympic Games.
Yep.
That is pure weightlifting.
Yep.
Strongman is what you see on TV.
Yeah, Atlas
the
Stones.
The big guys, the Atlas yeah. Stones, the truck pulls, the tire flips. Everyone knows strongman now, thanks to Thor Bjornsson, the mountain of Game of Thrones.
Ah, see, I haven't seen Game of Thrones, so
I haven't either. I've competed against the guy before, But I still don't watch his TV show.
There you go.
But, yeah, that's the difference. One is weightlifting is very technical, an Olympic sport for many, many years. Strongman is a test of strength that's been around for thousands of years.
How much is it mental? Like, I feel like something like pulling a plane or a train would be a big mental thing.
I had a conversation with someone the other day about the plane and the train, especially the train. The last train I pulled was 202 tons. It was an official world record. Now, I've got to get you up to watch one of these one day, especially the train, because you'll freak out. So the train is the weirdest part is you stand next to it. The wheels are as tall as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the wheels. And then you have a train on top of it. And then you have the carriages behind it. And it's not just that. You've actually, the science side, I have my own personal engineer, Matt Leslie, who's a good friend of mine, part of my car club. He's a jack of all trades. He's a fitter and turner, his job. He worked on the trains and all that type of stuff. So he does all the engineering stuff on it, so I don't have to think about it so much. So I'm so lucky to have him with me. Like, he just makes my life so much easier. But what you don't understand about a steam train is you're actually not just moving the wheels. You've got these massive pistons that are on the outside of the train that have air pressure inside of it. So you're actually pushing air in and out of the pistons at the same time. Okay. So you're pulling the train, pulling the weight, pushing the pistons in and out, pushing air in and out. So you look at it and you see me stand in front of it and you go, oh, you know, Biggie's a pretty big guy, 135 kilo dude. He's a big dude. And then you see the train behind him and go, yeah, he ain't that big.
Yeah.
You know, so I go into it thinking that it just has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It can't not happen.
Mm-hmm.
It can't not. I will not allow it not to happen. I've trained my butt off to do this. All these people have come out here to watch me do it. I'm not going to let them down.
Yeah.
I have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I give myself the opportunity to, you know, work with great people. You know, I work a lot with the Cancer Council. I work a lot with Variety. I work a lot with Cranial Facial. I work with Steam Ranger, who are the trains that I've pulled, raising money for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's all for a good cause. And I think to myself that there are so many people in such harder conditions than I am. And I go to the gym basically every day and train. You know, I'm just very lucky to have that opportunity to do that. So I should use my potential and gift to help others. And this is what I do and why I do it. So I would say to pull the train is like 70%, 60 to 70% mental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rest is just muscle.
Yeah.
You know, and I can train muscle.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I do in the gym every day.
Yeah.
It's about knuckling down. And when you're out there, just believing in your own ability, believing that, you know, everyone around you wants to see you succeed, my friends, my family, they give me the power I need to do it because, you know, it's a surreal feeling when you're doing it because I tend to forget everything. So between the moment of them going, the brakes are off and you drive into the harness, from there to when I finish, I can't remember it.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're just that focused. You know, you just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's why I have a very good crew around me to make sure that, you know, because I guess if I was probably thinking about it more, like when I was younger, when I used to do these demos, I used to prep it all, set it all up myself, do it, pack it all up, et cetera, et cetera. And I still do most of that now, but I've just got other people there to help me, you know, because it does make life a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. I definitely say there is a lot more mental than physical when you're pulling something that is really not humanly possible to pull.
Really. Don't let me stop you eating. Keep eating.
I will. Well, yeah, I was going to say, I'm halfway through talking and I'm looking down my food going, come on, man, give me a bit.
I can crop and edit, so that's fine.
All right.
Beautiful. So, because I know that you've done a whole bunch of shows at the Royal Show and whatever else as well.
That's a few years ago now as well, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I've stayed up to date a little bit, mostly through Steph.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
What kind of training and stuff have you done with Steph? Was that mostly helping? Because she's been on the show as well.
Yeah. So Steph, with me and after I helped deal with leading into Commonwealth Games. Because these days I'm now coaching the state weightlifting team.
There you go.
So, I coach most of the weightlifters in South Australia now. So I was helping Steph leading into the games. I was training with her. I was coaching her, et cetera, watching over, making sure she had eyes on her.
Mm-hmm.
Then after the games, I came a little bit more on hands-on with her coaching, more watching, more like whenever she'd go in and train, I'd be there to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Then she started doing some strong woman stuff with me, which was great. But of course, because the Com Games was very serious, she had a little bit of time off after that. We could do some strong woman together. But then now leading to the Olympics, that's where she's now knuckling down and going hard there. But
I saw she did the truck pull.
Oh.
Yep.
She's actually, she's pulled multiple trucks with myself. She's been down to Mount Gambier and pulled trucks down there. But she also pulled an oil tanker, like a train oil tanker, at the National Railway Museum a few years ago. I've got the camera footage and some photos. I have to give them to you because they're awesome. But that was like 22 ton and it was old, like old. Even I struggled to get it moving.
Yeah, okay.
So it can tell you how strong she is because she got it moving. So
there you go. Do you reckon I'd be able to do it?
With a bit of training?
Yeah.
I'll be waiting for you whenever you're ready.
I would love to. I've seen Steph pull the trucks. I'm like, man, I'd love to give that a go.
Why not? Whenever you're ready.
Oh, beautiful. Game on.
Well, we'll just take you through a little bit of a training session. Crash Strongman 101.
Sounds
good. We'll do that one day and then we'll tee you up for a truck pull. Like, it's, you know, we'll start with small, a little Tonka truck in the sandpit, and then we'll just build up. We'll get to a ute, then a little mini truck, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. I can see it. Perfect.
I'll sort you out, don't worry.
Beautiful. So, what does a training session look like for you then?
Depending what I'm getting ready for.
Okay.
So, when I was competing, depending on the type of show it was, if it was a heavy show, I'd be focusing on trying to get my body weight up.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the last real heavy competition I did was the Record Breakers or the Arnold, one of those two. I was about 140 to 145 kilos. Mm-hmm. I was squatting really heavy. I was deadlifting really heavy, pressing really heavy,
mm-hmm.
Big yokes, big farmer's walks, big stones, all that type of stuff. So really, beg your pardon, focusing on heavy, heavy stuff, shorter distances, just I sort of would lead into a starting of a program would be just strength, mm-hmm. build my strength levels up, power levels up, and then maybe 2 months out, I'd really start dialing in the actual events that I'm doing. So if I know what the event list is for the competition, I'd be training those events.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 3 weeks out, or probably maybe even 4 weeks out, I'd actually start training the strongman stuff twice a week rather mm-hmm. than once a week.
Yep.
So that would be leading into a competition, especially a heavy one. A lighter competition, well, again, you don't need to focus on strength so much. So like a Highland Games where you're throwing a lot of stuff like the caber or the weights or the big heavy hammers. That's more of a power sport. So, you know, you still have to be very strong, but you want to be maybe a little bit lighter,
mm-hmm.
A little bit sort of more powerful. So more weightlifting type exercises rather than heavy squats
mm-hmm.
and deadlifts. But these days now I'm getting these demonstrations and charity events and all that type of stuff. I'm very focused on solely doing the event that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So leading into the train pool, I spoke to the legendary strongman, Mr. Grant Edwards,
mm-hmm.
who is actually still the world record holder in the train pool because my train pool is unofficial and his was official. So Grant is actually a very good mentor of mine, a strongman legend to all us younger guys.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was, because I asked Grant, I sent him an email going, Grant, my name's Jordan Steffens. I'm this, I've done this, and this. Would I be allowed to attempt to pull a train? Because I believe in respecting the guys that came before you
yes.
and showing them the right respect and asking them. Like, again, I'm sure he wouldn't have cared if I didn't ask, but that's the way I am. I believe he set the standard here in those events. So I thought I'd ask his permission.
Yep.
So he said, of course, it'd be an honor to have you do it. So I just said, look, how did you train for it? So he ran me down on exactly how he trained for the event. And that's basically what I did. Just followed a very similar style program to what he did with a little bit of sort of my texture into it.
So you started with the sandpit Tonka trucks and built your way up from there?
Yeah, I think, I remember my first heavy truck pull was at Australia's Strongest Man in like 2010. 2011?
Yep.
It was a big, no, it's just a single semi. It was about 20. Just a
single semi.
It was 20. It was 20 odd ton. And I remember the starting line. I remember pulling and pulling and pulling and nothing happened for about 20 seconds. And then it just started to roll. And you're like, thank God. I moved about 7 meters. And I dropped the rope and did my old rah, you know, because that's what I do. And my mate who's with me is like, dude, check out your face. I'm like, what? So the hotel we were all posted at for this competition, I've gone into my room and I've got dots all over my face, broken blood vessels all through my head.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, it really popped me up because, again, I was only, what, 20 at the time, so I was still really green. I might have been strongman for 2 years. So still green as grass at the high level. You know, Australia's strongest man is this little 19-year-old there with these big dudes. I'm like, what the fuck is this guy doing here? But yeah, that was my first experience pulling that. So I didn't really start that light. I started with really heavy, but that's an Australian trait. In strongman in Australia, we have the biggest and heaviest truck pulls in the world.
Yeah.
We seem to do that here. I don't know why. Probably because our trucks are better than America's.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've just got back from the Northern Territory and...
Oh, you've seen them all, man.
Yeah. Well, what are they, like 53 metres long, some of them?
Yeah, and hundreds of tonnes. Yeah. Like, that's absolutely huge. And your time up there would have been absolutely fantastic. Learning curves, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some very interesting people up there.
Yeah, I was about to say, you obviously a very different experience for you up there than down here, but I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a learning curve.
Come back with a new look on life.
Yeah, definitely. You kind of come back and it's like, I kind of felt like I had to like reintegrate back into, mind you, because it was for a charity walk, right?
Mm.
So yeah, it was 55 days on the road in a motorhome, six of us.
Oh man.
So yeah, that was.
You just wanted to get home, back to your motorhome again? You'd park a motorhome out in front of your house. I don't sleep in this thing.
Fuck no.
Hell no, man. Hell no.
You know what I miss most is my dogs.
Oh, your dogs?
Yeah.
What have you got? I don't even see you got dogs. What dogs
are you? So I got they're both rescues. So she's the older one's a Labrador cross border collie.
Uh-huh.
And he's a Staffy crossed, we don't know. He's a bit of a mongrel.
We don't know, but it's something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. He's a fucking weird looking little thing. He's like stocky like a Staffy, but then he's got these long lanky legs. So, but then he's kind of got a Jack Russell face. So I don't know.
Wow.
But yeah, so
that's a new breed right there.
I think out of everything, it was those two. I was like out on the road. I'm trying to like steal people's dogs and just chuck them in the van. Like
you're mine.
Yeah. Cool. So, again, coming back to the mental side.
Mm.
So you've said that kind of you feel like it's 60 to 70% mental for something like that. Mm. Is there any sort of mental training you're doing then?
Yeah, so it's actually more for me, it's about actually learning the event. Mm-hmm. So with a train pull, truck pull, whatever type of heavy pull, you've really got to learn to understand. And this was one of the real big things that I noticed about coming into the event when we tested it the first time, I broke my harness. So I've set up and I've driven into the harness as hard as I could and it's exploded off my shoulders.
Jesus.
And I've had the shit. Unlinked it off my back, fucking ripped the harness, I've thrown it halfway across the fucking train yard. Everyone, like my mate Matt, everyone, wide berth. Like I've stormed off something fucking fierce. Because you put so much effort, so much drive into that one moment and you just have this huge explosion of everything going out.
Mm.
And you sit there going, you mother... Oh, it frustrates me now.
Yeah.
You know, so we had... I calmed down,
went
back over, took some big deep breaths, you know, sat down with my mate Matt. He redid up a harness for me and we went in again. Tried again, failed. Mm-hmm. Tried again.
As in, like, you could I kept trying
because we had to test it to make sure the ground was flat.
Yeah.
This was before pulling the first time 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled it, kept trying. And then one time I pulled it and Matt's like, it started to roll.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've thought back and gone, what have I done to make it almost roll? Okay, I've done this, this, and this. All right, so Jordan, it's going to take you 20 seconds to get it rolling. You're going to have to put in 20 seconds of effort
mm-hmm.
before it rolls.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get your head to just deal with that much pain for 20 seconds. The biggest thing that everyone goes, what hurts the most when you pull the trainer is your legs, your back, it's your head. The blood pressure would be so high, I would shudder to think what it gets to. Because you just drive into this harness and all the blood rushes to your head. Like, that's why I had the broken blood vessels.
Yeah.
And so we've sort of had one more crack at it and it started to roll. And I've gone, yes, thank God for that. You know, but it was really just learning the event and learning really what I had to give to get. So sitting there after I broke the harness and having to center myself back again was not easy to do. I think a lot of guys tend to mess up in strongman because they're too gung-ho. And I would have been when I was younger too, but I'm very lucky. I had a lot of older mentors when I was doing strongman when I was younger. And to be honest, I was very lucky to become a professional strongman at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned pro at 21. So
yep.
I'm the youngest pro strongman Australia's ever had.
Yeah, okay.
And so I got to compete against the best guys in the world at a very young age. I got to learn a whole lot of stuff off them. So it's just not just the train pull, it's any event. Just learning where you need to go with it. You know, I'll fill in a little story about a competition I did, and I was up against a guy who probably should have beaten me at this event. He was better. He had a better grip than me. He was just as fast as me, probably not as strong, but he was fast, you know, because that was one of my biggest strengths, was being quick over the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching him. And this is Jordan that's been doing strongman for many years now. And I've sat back and gone, okay, he's going to go up to that farmer's walk really early. He's going to chalk up and he's going to be ready to go, thinking that we're going to go straight away. So I've walked up slowly. He's already there chalking up with his coach, like getting his grip. And I'm just walking up slowly, talking to the crowd as I always do, chatting to the kids, whatever, just chatting away, slowly putting my chalk on. I've walked up, set myself inside the event, looked straight down the gun and gone, he is already ready and ready to go. And he's going to burn himself out before we've even started.
Mm-hmm.
Got a chalk on my hands. The guy's like, you ready to go? Like the referee said, no. Just wait 1 second. So I re-chalked again. Set my hands. He's been set for fucking 3 minutes, 4 minutes. He's fucking hurry, ready to go. I'm good. All right, ready. So we both nodded. Set. Go. Bang. Both up. Bang. Down the line. We're literally neck and neck. I've got the camera footage. We're neck and neck. Like, I kid you not. And I could see him try and kick up another gear. He's kicked up another gear. The farmer's walk's hit him in the leg and he's dropped. And I've just gone straight past him and finished.
Wow.
So it's knowing when you're at your maximum and how hard to go. Like, I could have tried to go harder and tried to beat him by just going harder. But if I went harder, I would have done the exact same mistake. Mm-hmm. So it's a learning curves left, right, and center. And that's a part of the mental game, I guess, is learning from your mistakes.
Definitely.
You know, he was a young kid at the time. He was younger than me. I was, you know, probably in my mid-20s by then, mid to late 20s. And he was a really talented young guy, and he's still around the place now. And I hope he does come back and keep kicking it, because he's got some ability and talent. But I could see just the little things, you know, and they're the little things that I probably did when I first started.
Yeah.
And hopefully he learned from those things as well, you know. As sort of horrible as it sounds from my point of view that he didn't do well, it's got nothing to do with me wanting bad upon him. But at that point in time, I wanted to win.
Mm.
And I did everything I could to win. So even if it was just taking that little bit longer because he was, you know, tiring himself out. That's one of the other biggest things I teach my athletes with coaching is, don't burn all your mental before you've even stepped on the platform. I've got one little chick I coach. I hope she listens to this because she knows I'm talking about her. She'll know it. She'll amp herself up. She'll have all this heavy music just belting. I'm like, you're not even lifting the bar yet. What are you amped up for? It's the bar.
Yeah.
So you want to amp up. Amp up when you step on the platform. When you're off the platform, you should be able to talk no different to what we're talking right now. You should be as relaxed as possible, talking shit, whatever you want to do, listen to whatever you want to, chill out. Don't get, because by the time you're on the platform, your central nervous system's fried, your adrenaline's gone, you've got nothing left.
Yeah.
You're out there and you're wondering why you've just got no energy.
Yeah.
It's because you've used it all.
Yeah.
I learned that from a young age from one of my coaches. He's like, why are you listening to such heavy music on the bus ride into the gym?
Mm.
Relax.
Mm.
just chill. Mm-hmm. When you're here, that's when you switch it on. Yeah. Don't worry about otherwise. Like, otherwise, I'm going to help you on the platform. Like, you've really got to learn to center yourself, with, mm-hmm. like, which, again, like what you teach. Really just trying to limit that adrenaline for when you need mm-hmm. it. Weightlifting, especially, weightlifting is such a quick sport. The bar is on the ground, next second's above your head in less than a second.
Mm-hmm.
You need every bit of that
mm-hmm.
Adrenaline and mental stable to get that lift. If you yeah. don't have it,
mm.
you're not going to step out there.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things yeah. I notice with my athletes, just trying to keep them calm.
I'm so glad you've said that, because I this is something I face a lot of the time in combat sports as a coach, and it's kind of a I guess it's an ongoing challenge, because there's a lot of old school trainers that I come across who preach that, you know, switch on, get amped up, get angry before a fight. And obviously
I reckon I know some of those coaches too.
Yeah. And obviously I would expect that an athlete would listen to their full-time kind of fight coach over me, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But then there's me kind of going, you know, as you said, central nervous system, you've already cooked it before you're even out there. And so they're all pumped up before the fight. And I sort of try and preach, well, hang on, the second someone throws a fist at your face, you're going to switch on. Mm. You don't need to be switched on before you've even gone out there. You need to be as mellow as anything.
I think the best athlete to watch is Usain Bolt.
Mm.
He is so chilled out. Okay, he's Jamaican, so he's always chilled out. But you watch before he does a race, he's got this massive smile, playing to the crowd, just thinks this is the best moment of his life.
Yeah.
But as soon as he steps to those blocks,
yeah,
that's a different athlete. Absolutely. Right there.
Yeah.
But he knows. Like I said, you watch him come out, you know, he might have his headphones in, probably listening to Bob Marley, but the camera's on him and, you know, you'll see his focus, but he'll just, you know, smile up at the camera. Like, he can that to that. He can just turn it off and turn it on like that. No, he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when he runs, he just looks so relaxed and just, he's just such a good athlete. Just unreal.
Yeah.
Right. And there, I guess at that level you need to be.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he's the best runner absolutely. Of all time. So, yeah, no, I think that is, like I said, it's funny that you notice that with the fighting guys as well. But I guess as society now changes and we look into a lot of the more mental side, but the deep mental side, which I'm sure, again, that is your cup of tea and where you are really looking into, is going to hopefully breed a very new super athlete, really.
Yeah.
I wish I had this video. Ed Hall did a video, just as a side comment here, on his deadlift when he deadlifted 500 kilos. He talks about going to a he went to a psychologist to... All these, I will find it and send it to you. I'm pretty sure I got taken out of YouTube, but it is one of the best videos on mental training I've ever seen by a strong man. Like, he went to the extent of, he was training to deadlift heavy. He pulled like 463 at the deadlift championships. Someone turns around and goes, yeah, we'll see if you pull 500. He goes, I'll pull 500 next year. Guy's like, yeah, I'll put a bet on that. Ed put a massive bet on it, like big, enough to settle him for the rest of his life.
Wow.
Bet. So the biggest deadlift he'd done in training leading in was 467, 470, something like that, around 460, 470. And he was talking about he couldn't pull anything more than that. He just couldn't lift anything more than that. But then he came down and chatted about the woman picking up the car with the baby underneath it situation. So I think he said your average puncher on the street uses 30% or 40% of their muscle fibers.
Mm-hmm.
A strongman or an athlete like yourself or myself, we use somewhere around 70%.
Mm-hmm.
These ladies that pick up the cars, they use 100% of their muscle fibers.
Yep.
So Ed had to try and find a way to use 100% of his muscle fibers to deadlift it. Because 500 kilos, honestly, if anyone thought that he was going to do it, they either were training with him, they were him, or they're lying. Because I didn't think he could.
Yep. Right, at least you're honest.
Well, yeah. Man, if somebody tells me they're not, they're a liar. I don't doubt Eddie's strength and his ability, but I just didn't think anyone would do 500 kilos. Yeah. 500 kilos. 500 kilos as a deadlift is just... you just don't know how... I still don't know how to comprehend it.
Yeah.
So he's gone to, like, psychologists, to hypnotherapy, to... everything to try and get his brain to use 100% of his fibers. He got to the point where he was wanting to get they have in ambulances when you pass out and they try and kick you back in again. I forget what it was. Adrenaline.
Yep.
They were going to shoot adrenaline straight into his body. They're trying to work out where, yeah, which could have done some serious damage. Yeah. And this was only a few months ago. He goes, no, we're going to do that. It could kill me. Mm-hmm. It could kill you at the comp. 10,000 people in the crowd, you know, millions of people watching on TV. Awkward. Imagine that dying. it's dangerous enough.
Mm.
And he's gone to see this psychologist, and they've worked and worked and worked and worked and worked him into a mental state where he would just get so zoned out, but he'd set it up in his brain that the 500 kilos was like something to do with his kids.
Yes,
to save his kids.
Yeah, yeah, you have to have a purpose behind it. Yeah,
so the because it's, what did he say? It's like somebody tells you to lift 500 kilos, well, you're not going to be able to do it.
Mm.
Somebody holds a gun to your head and says you got to do it. Well, it's a different story.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's going to be a life or death situation. Absolutely. I forget what he called it, but there was a name for it. And he was talking about the life or death situation. So that's what he put it down to. He was talking about he had this little trigger in his hand where he twisted some skin on his hand and that just put mm-hmm. him into it.
Yep, so anchoring.
Yeah, and you watch him pull that deadlift. I remember it was 4 a.m. in the morning. I stayed up all night, watched it. And I just remember going... And watching, going, he just looks like he's in another goddamn place. Mm. I watched him pull like 465 before that because he went like 465 straight to 500. It was a ridiculous jump. And in my mind, I'm like, good luck, mate. It's not even going to come off the ground. But he just set up and I was like, oh, fuck, there's something different.
Mm.
You know, he looked like he was not on planet Earth by any standpoint. It was goddamn ridiculous. Then he sets up and just pulls that weight off the floor and it is goddamn ridiculous. He reckons as he locked out the bar at the top position, he's clicked back into reality and gone, fuck yeah, and then gone, oh, fuck, I better put this down. It's heavy. And he's dumped it back on the ground. He's hit the deck as well. He went down.
Yeah.
Like that's the amount. Because he 500 kilos, no matter where you hold it, it's just fucking hugely heavy. But I will send you that link if I can find it because it is ridiculous the extent he went to. Like, and that's the extent all these guys go to now. Mm. That is, you know, a 500 kilo deadlift is, like I said, just too astronomical to me. I just don't know how a human does it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
It's funny you should mention that about the percentage of the muscle fibers that we use. I was reading a book just recently where they were talking about, you know, people like lifting cars off, you know, others and whatever else. And... a lot of it does come down to, so the brain actually, it's like it cuts in on what we're physically capable of as a means to keep the body safe. So safe from injury, safe from passing out, whatever it may be. Mm. And so in order to get beyond that, you actually, it comes down to, yeah, having that purpose big enough. So whether that be, because having a purpose just centered around ourselves isn't big enough. But when it comes down to something of, you know, as you said, the example of, you know, if something was going to happen to his kids or, you know, in other cases where you hear of people lifting cars off others, you know, it's to rescue someone else. And so that's the first thing I often do with my, with any client in any sport. I say, okay, well, what's the why? And sadly, most people, they're not super clear on it. It's a question they've never been asked. So it's something as simple as, you know, well, I want to test my own limits, which is great, but it's limited to just them. So that's, I say, okay, well, why do you want to test your own limits? What ripple effect is that going to have on the rest of the world? And suddenly they go from being a B-grade celebrity, I was going to say, B-grade athlete, to an A-grade, because they see that in them doing well, the ripple effect goes way beyond them.
Yeah, and that's probably the thing that goes along with the things I do, the planes and trains, because, you know, along with me getting something out of it, a whole lot of other people get something out of it too.
Absolutely.
And it's the most important thing to me to see someone else get
something
out of it. And, you know, it's one of those real big things where it's like you said, the ripple effect, the domino effect.
Yes.
Knock one and they all go down with it. But it takes, you know, a lot of time, a lot of effort to just train your brain to do those types of things.
Yeah.
Like Ed did a year of getting it together.
Mm.
And he was not even pulling near that months out.
Mm.
They would try everything.
Mm.
They try it all. And, you know, like I was, as I said before, I believe the more mental, strong the athletes get, because There is a limit in my aspect. I'll talk about strength. There is an absolute limit where your body cannot lift more.
Mm.
There is a limit.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how far your brain's willing to take that limit.
Yeah, though. Absolutely.
You, like I said, 500 kilo deadlift. That might be the limit that Ed's body is willing to take him. But who says there's somebody's body out there that can take more than 500? Mm. But they just don't have the brain to take that 500 kilos yet.
Mm.
So it's a funny one to see that. You know, a lot of guys just don't get the mental game.
Mm.
They just don't get it. They just think they pick it up and put it down or whatever. You know, it takes a pretty strong-minded person to be a fighter, an elite athlete, a strongman, a bodybuilder, whatever. Bodybuilding's another one. To train that hard, not eating. I watched Joe Rogan's podcast with Doron Yates. Mm-hmm. Doron Yates is one of my favorite bodybuilder of all time, six-time Mr. Olympia. And he talks about it too. Like, he just talks about the mental side. You know, Doron Yates lived in Birmingham. Bodybuilding in his time was big in the US for Arnold and all that type of stuff. It was small in the UK. You know, he just went into a dark, dank gym and trained his ass off. His talent was good, but it wasn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
But he worked harder than everybody else
mm-hmm.
to get there. And he became, six times Mr. Olympia, you know, just unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so every sport has it.
Mm.
It's just, again, how far you're willing to take that mindset.
Absolutely. Speaking of bodybuilding, because, I mean, obviously you know that I come from a bodybuilding, fitness modeling background. I remember the heavy leg sessions that I used to do and the difference between coming back to that, you know, staying relaxed. I remember doing these ridiculous drop sets. So do you remember Phil Ward? Did you ever meet Phil Ward?
I do know Phil very well.
Yes. So Phil was my PT back in the day. And he'd make me do these ridiculous pyramid sets on the leg press. So this one particular day, he's like, let's go for a PB. And I shocked the hell out of myself. And because at this point, this is when I was first starting to study the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading about the more relaxed you can stay, the more, you know, it's hormonally tells your body that, like, you know, you're not at risk, you're not in danger, you know. So the more mentally chilled you can stay, the more physically capable you are. And so I was like, well, I'm going to test this theory. So, you know, that was the ultimate time to test it when I was under huge pressure with these ridiculous leg sessions. So Phil says to me this one day, you know, we're going to go for a PB. So we'd done, you know, a couple of warm-up sets. We're building our way up. And every set I'd be in huge pain, but I'd shut my eyes and I'd just
breathe it out.
Breathe with each, you know, as I'd push the leg press up, you know, just super chill. And I shocked myself because, I mean, we're only in a small kind of, I guess, family kind of gym, but no weight plates left. So he's like, well, short of me sitting on it, which leaves, you know, leaves me without a spotter if he's sitting on it. But, yeah, 320 kilos for 15 reps. And
I bet you walked in the gym that day not thinking you're going to do that, did
you? Hell no. Mm. And then he's like, well, I mean, like, I wasn't failing on the 15th rep. So he's like, well, we're not going to sit here and get you to rep them out for forever.
Yeah, 30, 40 reps later.
We start, you know, drop setting.
Oh.
And
Phil, you're an asshole.
He was pretty awful.
No, he is. He's a prick.
But I couldn't believe it. Like, and it just came down to the difference of the quote-unquote old Brie who would sit there and be like, fuck, this hurts. This is so painful. I'm leg pressing, you know, 260 kilos or whatever it might have been. To 320 kilos for reps and then drop setting it, like, how easy it was just to, you know, just chill out and just.
It's like when, I don't know if you've ever done this before with athletes, loaded a bar and then not knowing what's on it.
Yes. Yep.
I think that's just a fantastic way
yep.
of just going around. Because we've all done it. You'll go to the gym and you'll be working out to a heavy single and you'll misload it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll misload it comfortably too. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, I was meant to squat 150. My PR is 152. All right, I'll get 150, then we'll go 155 for a PR. Cool, no worries. Jeez, oh, that felt pretty heavy. Jeez, obviously, I'm not going to get a PR. Then you go back through and count as 157.
Mm.
Oh, no wonder it was fucking heavy. And then you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's a huge PR already.
Yeah.
It happens to everyone. And I think coaches that do that, maybe in the off season, don't they do it in the on season? You can't do it in the on season, but. If I was just testing that theory on an athlete, I'd do it in the off season just, you know, to see how they react to it. But just go, you know what, we're going to work up to a heavy single. I'm going to load your bar.
Mm-hmm.
I'll load.
Yeah.
I'll give you small increases, but you're not going to know about
it. Yeah.
So I think it's just another good mental game, especially for strength athletes.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that don't have confidence going on the platform, which is huge in athletes. A lot of athletes just don't have the confidence. They go out there going, oh, that's heavy. Yeah. I'll wait on it. Of course it's heavy. But they just don't have the confidence to go out there and just really, you know, go as hard as they possibly would want to let themselves go. So you just give them the confidence and go, look, you've done that. You've done it. Easy done. You didn't even think about it. You just did it.
Yeah.
Okay, it felt heavy, but...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You still did it.
Yeah. Game-changing stuff, huh?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So you're obviously doing pretty well in the PR side of things if you're tied into all these charities and whatever else. What's the process been to starting to, you know, get that to happen? Has it been something you've consciously gone out and studied, or is it something that's kind of fallen into place?
I think it's a natural thing for me.
Yeah.
I can naturally talk a lot.
Yep.
I think I was just lucky to have very good mentors when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Jones was one of my mentors. It was my first sponsor from Gentech Nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him just work, talk the talk, you know, all that type of stuff. And learning from him and learning from a whole lot of the other guys about, you know, promoting yourself, thinking outside the box. So I pride myself on being one step ahead of the curve. So I can see something coming up going, yeah, that's not going to be good for me. I'm going to take it in my own direction. So I guess when I got towards the end of my competitive career, I'm lifetime drug free. Lifetime drug free. But strongman is not a little drug free sport. I've won plenty of competitions. I've lost more than I've won. I've been to the top in Australia. I've competed on the world scene. I've probably got about as high as I could possibly be as a drug-free athlete, especially these days. It's a lot different. So I had to think to myself, where do I go from here? Well, I love strongman. I love the sport. I just love it. But I need to do it the way I enjoy doing it and keep the love for it. So I had to think outside the box. So, you know, I promote myself as like a circus-style strongman now, as you can see, the filthy mo.
It's pretty filthy.
Yeah, it's going to chop off here, actually. I'm going to curl it up, actually. But I really had to think about how do I still do this sport but do it the way I remember it when I was younger. You know, I remember the sport because when I first started, there was only about 15 to 20 of us in the country.
Yeah.
And I just used to think the guys at the top level were just the bomb, man. Like the guys, my mentors, my heroes when I grew up, I just thought they were the best things ever, you know. And, you know, the sport's obviously a lot more mainstream than it used to be. A lot of people do strongman now. And, you know, it's changed a lot from when I first started. So I sort of went along with it and went, you know what, how do I make myself different to everybody else? So I embrace that I'm drug-free. I embrace my abilities with what I have. I embrace that I can talk, that I can, you know, try and be as charismatic as possible, try and hopefully people enjoy what I do. You know, I just try and think outside the box, you know. Like I said, I'm going to be prepping for a fringe show in 2020. Which will be just a hell of a lot of fun that I can't wait to do, because that's the type of strongman I like. I like the showy side.
Yeah.
The competitive side, I probably lost the drive for a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it just moved on past the competitive side, and I love the show side. I love helping people. I love just going out there and just doing my thing, and I love people smiling. I like to see that people enjoy and they're happy after seeing what I do. And you know, the marketing PR side, you know, it's just about making myself different to everybody else, staying ahead of the curve. Like, everyone else just looks the same. They just look like another dude on steroids. Like, how can you go into a high school and do a talk and be legitimate doing that?
Yeah.
I can walk into any high school and do talks with kids, and I love doing that stuff. It's a pleasure and an honor for me to do it. You know, again, it's a non-drug tested sport, so you do whatever you have to do. Don't get me wrong, I've got so many friends at the top level. If they want to be the best, I understand what it takes to be the best. I understand what it takes. I chose not to go down that route because that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
I deliberately disadvantaged myself by being drug free. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. I can still look back on it and go, I had a pretty good career for who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Could I have done more if I went the other way? Probably. Would I have gone to World's Strongest Man? Yes. Mm-hmm. Would I have placed highly? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. So I guess I really try and market myself as something different. You know, a lot of the guys can't talk well. They just, they give us a bad name. They're big dummies, man. They just, they just look stupid. They don't talk to kids. Like, it's a, like, I just can't help but smile when I see other, when kids come front row center to see you do something. I think it's the best.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know. That could be the next strong woman, strong man standing on the sideline. So, I guess, yeah, the PR management thing came very naturally to me. I was able to just, you know, try and promote myself the best way I could, and that's how I went about things. Tried to, again, I was lucky. I came into the sport early when it was quite a niche sport, very small, so I guess I was a biggish name in the sport in Australia early on when the sport wasn't that big, and I was always, as a young kid, was touted as the next big thing in strongman because I was young and big and strong and, you know, did my thing. But, again, the sport's gotten a lot bigger and there's a lot of good guys out there now. There's really good guys, you know, that I don't think if I came into a competition right now I could beat. Maybe if I trained for it, maybe, but there's good guys. So, you know, I just got to market myself differently to them.
Yeah.
You know, they do their thing, I do my thing.
Yeah. You know?
So very lucky to have good mentors. But I think, again, like I said, I've just been very lucky to have maybe a bit of a natural sort of knack to do it, which is lucky, you know.
Yeah. I think what you said there about figuring out who you are and how that's a benefit, because, and I mean, this is something you and I were talking about earlier before we hit record. I think it's about if you want to do well, you have to play to your strengths. And so, you know, for many, they don't have the gift of the gab.
No pun intended, strength.
Yes.
Oh, that was terrible. I'm sorry for cutting you off. So that was just terrible. Go on, please. Oh, shit.
So, yeah, if they don't have the gift of the gab, like, it's not the be-all to end-all. You don't have to try and perfect that. I mean, work on it, sure. But, you know, I'm a big believer, like, yeah, do what you can to build your weaknesses into, you know.
Like we were chatting about before.
Yeah.
I hated standing up in front of crowds when I was a kid. I thought it was the worst thing ever.
Exactly. But then at the same time, focus on, and here we go again, making your strengths like your, what's the word?
Your ace.
Yeah.
Your ace, man, when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, like I'm the same as you. Like I naturally speak well to people and that plays in my favour. And I do think to a degree you can teach it, but also there's an element of it which is, you know, is just natural ability.
Well, I'm not 7 foot tall, so I never play basketball. It's just genetics. I'm not 7 foot tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how about me for that, you know?
Yeah. But so I think, you know, it's identifying what makes you stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not having the gift of the gab, well, then figure out what the other thing is and play to that.
Absolutely. Like you said, we were chatting about this before. A whole of the talks I do at schools is about finding your talent.
Yeah.
That's what school's for. That's why you get taught stuff there, to find out what you're going to do in the future. The school doesn't tell you what to do. We all think they do when we're younger. We're like, you tell me what to goddamn do.
Yeah.
But it's not. They're just giving you the tools to build yourself to find out who you really are. You know, and I think, again, a lot of people do struggle with trying to find their goal or their meaning in their life. You know, some guys just don't have that touch with certain things, but some people just do. It's about you know, embracing it too. Just embrace who you are as a person and run with it. Run with it. It doesn't matter what other people think, as long as you're not going around hurting people, as long as you don't think you're the best murderer in the world. You know what I mean? Like, if you're not doing things to hurt people, but you're doing what you want to do, more power to you. You know, there's more, the world would be a better place if more people just push their belief of their own will, again, like I said, as long as it doesn't hurt people. Because I believe there's some really talented people out there that are still hiding.
Oh, absolutely. What do they say? What's that quote? I'm about to butcher it. Something about a graveyard, and you go to a graveyard and it's the most...
You're so on your own on this one. Oh, I have not a clue.
I don't know. It's something about like the... richest place in the world is a graveyard because there's so many ideas which have never been founded.
Oh, totally. Like I couldn't agree with that more. Absolutely. There's so many things that just, like on that type of thing, I'm big on like the industrial era. I'm a bit of a history nerd sometimes. Like I love docos. I love history docos.
Yeah, me too.
Like I just finished watching, for the 10th time, The Men Who Built America.
Yep.
So it's based on J.P. Morgan, Andrew Carnegie, J.D. Rockefeller, and Henry Ford.
Yep.
These four guys that built the industrial area, basically. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, J.D. Rockefeller was petrol, oil, etc., mm-hmm. etc., mining. Andrew Carnegie was steel. Mm-hmm. J.P. Morgan was banking, and Henry Ford was car.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability these guys had to read people, read situations, mm-hmm. like it is just unbelievable.
Mm.
And you wonder why, you know, Rockefeller's worth like $300 billion or something ridiculous, $400 billion. Mm. Like that is just astronomical wealth.
Yeah.
Like astronomical.
Yeah.
You know, but these guys just had a knack
yeah.
for, you know, seeing the future and going, eh,
yeah,
I'm going to do that. Like Edison or Tesla or anyone yeah. like that, that was just so ahead of things, but they knew what they were doing and they believed in their ability to do something.
Yes.
You know? Who would have thought in the late 1800s they would have lights? Like, to us, it's like, yeah, yeah, well, if you don't have a light, what's the matter with you? But, you know, it's crazy to yeah. really think about it. It really is these guys, you know, the people that built the industrial era, but even before that, the bronze era, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's pretty crazy. You think about the pyramids, man.
They, yeah.
How long ago were they built? And they're still there.
Don't even get me started on the yeah. pyramids.
Yeah. It's crazy. It really is crazy to think about when you literally sit down and go, somebody built that long ago. We can't even line up stuff today. Mm. Oh, man. Mm. I've seen people's houses get built and you go, what the?
I was watching a doco about the pyramids and they were saying that they don't actually believe that they were built as tombs. They believe that they were built as energy.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, as what do you call them? Like they're giant batteries, essentially. Yeah. And because they're, and I'm going to butcher this, but my understanding of it is that they're actually built on meridian lines of the Earth.
That doesn't surprise me either.
Yeah, and there was something as well they found and they've been hidden, but they found...
hidden by the Vatican? That's another kettle of fish, right?
they've found hieroglyphics which look like helicopters yeah. and planes.
Do not doubt that in the slightest.
Yeah.
Michelangelo, guys like that, just so far ahead
yeah.
of their time. Like you say, at the graveyard, there are so yeah. many things that are just dead that you sit there going, imagine how, like we all always, and it's always talked about how far we've come as a civilization the last, what, like, when did we land on the moon? 50s?
Yeah, that sounds about right. So from the 50s, I never memorized.
I wasn't alive when we landed on the moon. But like 50s to now, let's say, you just look at how technology's changed. How they talk about on your mobile phone, you have more technology, more everything than they had to get someone to the moon. There's no way I would have gotten that rocket ship knowing that.
No shit. Yeah.
You know, but they just had the belief in their abilities.
Mm. Have you researched much of the Roman Empire?
No,
I
haven't.
I've been super into Julius Caesar and his story because I love...
You know he got stabbed in the back?
He got stabbed, I think, 48 times.
In the back, yeah.
No, like he got... It was...
Although in the whole nine yards, they went everywhere.
Yeah, could. Yeah. So yeah, it was... Okay. It was the... Oh, I always forget the word. A political group. And they basically...
They went nuts, didn't they?
They dog-acted yeah. him. They tricked his guards and separated him from his guards. And then it was his stepson who stabbed him first.
Nice. That's the yep. way to do it, champ.
Yep. And then, yeah, all the rest just... Yeah, and I think it was either 48 or 52 times. He's incredible, though, because with the combat sports, what I love is the idea of... Combat sports is like a high-stakes chess match.
Mm.
And... So Julius Caesar, I remember watching a doco about his military career.
Mm.
And he got himself into a bit of a shady situation where they were trying to take over, and again, I'm going to forget the name, but they were trying to take over a bit of land north of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd cornered this military group, their opposition, and they had the opposition had burnt off all the land with the idea that basically it would starve them out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they got nothing to go with.
Yeah. So Caesar got his troops to build a giant wall around them. So basically they're guarding on the outer of the wall and the troops are, the enemy troops are in there slowly starving to death.
No shit.
So, and I can't remember the details, but somehow this enemy troop managed to call in reinforcements. So we've got them on the inner circle.
Romans.
Yep, the Romans on the outer circle.
And then the reinforcements on the outside.
Yep, and then the reinforcements to the enemy on their way in. So Caesar's then got his troops to build a second wall. So now it's a donut. So they've got the enemy troops on the inside and then they've got Caesar's troops in the donut and then they're being attacked from the outer wall. So the outer, and I'm watching this going, how the fuck is he going to survive this? And they're like, I think they're outnumbered 3-1, something ridiculous like that. And so,
Wow.
So I'm going, well, what the fuck? Like he's just trapped them all. Like they've got the troops on the inner circle trying to rush them from the inside. They've got the outer circle trying to rush them from the outside. So what Caesar's done is he's got some of his troops to smash down the wall on the back entrance, so the outer wall, and they've circled back around and then attacked the outer enemy from... So the they've circled around.
Oh,
so
no
the,
kidding.
So the outer enemy have gone, fuck, they've called in like the Roman army, the entire Roman army as reinforcements.
So they've done the
So
they've tricked them. That is hilarious. So
they've bailed. And then, of course, the inner circle had to just completely surrender and Caesar just killed them off or kept them as slaves.
That's the way Caesar...
But I'm like, fucking hell. Like, that's warfare 101. That is strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. That is
high stakes chess.
Absolutely. It's funny you say that about the fighting sports because, again, when I started wrestling when I was a kid, that is what it is.
Mm.
You are waiting for the next person to make the mistake.
Yeah.
You're just feeling for it.
Yeah.
Waiting,
mm-hmm.
waiting. And then it happens. You're like, there it goes. You're mine now.
The powerful thing, the charity event I supported was for epilepsy.
Yeah.
Julius Caesar had epilepsy.
Ah.
And I didn't find out until the night before I left. I'd done all this study on him.
I don't mind that.
Yeah, and then found out he had epilepsy. The day before I left. So I was like,
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You done much on Winston Churchill?
No.
I've got a DVD, Darkest Hour, where they talk about him. Because he had some pretty big ups and downs as well. Like he fucked up one thing and then obviously had some pretty big, issues with the next when he became minister.
Mm-hmm.
And but he took England through a pretty hard time in the war.
Mm.
You know, there's this whole, a lot of political leaders that have been just so good. Mm. But, they learn the hard way too.
Mm.
Absolutely. Everyone learns the hard way. It's just about, again, seeing it. And I guess for Churchill, it was the same thing, just trusting that, he's messed up in the past, but just having that self-belief that you can get it right the next time.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
Cool. We've taken a massive detour from where I thought we'd go.
I know. It just goes more deep and meaningful as it goes. You have a conversation with a strong man, it turns into politics.
Yeah, this was not where I thought it would go.
See, that's funny because a lot of people, I guess I don't know, maybe I just don't give off that vibe as that type of person to look into that type of stuff, but I do. I love, like I said, I love old school history. I love that type of stuff, strategic stuff and just learning about it. I've always been a big believer in... Don't ever shut anyone out because you'd be surprised what you can learn from someone.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter who they are. I don't care if they're 15 or they're 45 or they're 100 or they're 12. Little kids say the funniest things sometimes, but then you just go, wow, that was actually really, really insightful
what
you just said there. They don't even know it was insightful, but they said it. Plus their lives are so simple.
Mm.
Maybe your life could be a bit more simple like theirs.
Mm.
You forget what your life is like. And then you go to the older spectrum. They've lived everything.
Yeah.
Like I have a massive respect for anyone that made it through the wars.
Oh yeah.
World War I, World War II. Just to be a part of that. Okay, there's wars on now, but that's not this type of war. Mm. Not war fought, you know, not wars fought from miles away,
mm.
you know, with weapons. Mm. This is trench warfare where people are just
going to
mowed down.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, again, another aspect of it all, I guess.
Yeah. I going through the Northern Territory, because, I mean, that's so isolated out there. Some of the people I met and the things I learnt from them, like, and truth be told, they're the kind of people, and this is me, like, I had to check myself out there.
Mm.
They're people who I had a judgment on and, you know, kind of, because they're not the normal kind of people I'd connect with in day-to-day life.
Sounds like my trip to Russia, basically.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't, put it this way, I wouldn't completely just not give them a chance, but I certainly didn't go, you know, this is the kind of person
I'd connect with. Yeah, this is the person I'd walk up to and talk to for an hour.
Yeah, and some of the things they taught me, some of the wake-up calls they gave me, you know, I met a truckie who, so he drives the big, you know, 53-metre long mm-hmm. fucking road trains.
Mm.
And again, kind of, I guess, and this sounds awful, but I had a bit of a perception around truckies that, you know, lazy, you know, beer drinking.
Yeah, I know a few truckies. Bought a few trucks, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. And like, I mean, he gave me a massive wake-up call around like just some personal stuff, and it was just one sentence, and it's had me sitting there for like, I mean, I still sit there and think about it and go, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, that changed my whole perception of my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
One sentence.
Mm. Yeah, again, and it's usually those ones that are the most hard-hitting because you just, one, don't see it coming, and two, it's just so insightful. You're like, where did that just come from? Why? Yeah. And you sort of think about the other people in your life going, they didn't even come up with that. And look at where they are in their lives. You know,
So
it's pretty amazing what you can learn, especially when you go to somewhere that's very different.
Mm.
So going to Russia was like that for me. You know, it's a very different place.
Yeah.
Most people take it as a very scary place, but it's not.
No?
It's not. Yeah, have you ever wanted to travel Europe?
Put it this way, like I would like to go to every country.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be one of those people where I've stepped foot in every single country.
You're into history?
Yes.
You need to go to Russia.
Yeah?
You will see things that you'll just freak out.
Yeah.
Here in Australia, like the oldest thing building-wise, you sort of see maybe, what, 200 years old, 300 years old maybe. You know, obviously the Aboriginal carvings and stuff like that, you know, they're a lot older. In the middle of Moscow, you walk down a street, there's a building that's been there since like thousands of years ago. Like an actual building that's like 1,000 years old. You walk past and go, that was made in like 900 AD.
Yeah.
You're like, what? What? Well, hold on. That's like 1,000, that's like almost 2,000 years ago. Yeah. And it's there. It's there. It's sitting right in front of you. You're like, how the fuck is that still there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just see, and then you go to the Kremlin and the Red Square, and you just think about what type of things that have happened there.
Mm.
You know, especially when the Cold War was on. Pretty crazy to think about. And it's not just, you know, not just Moscow or St. Petersburg or Russia, but anywhere in Europe. Amsterdam's the same.
Yeah.
I did the Netherlands when I went over there, and I'll do England. And
Done any of South America?
No.
No? See, I'd love to get across for like Chichen Itza and whatever else and see, you know, all the, where they used to do all the sacrifices.
The Aztec warrior type stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just anything like that. The Viking stuff, the Celtic stuff. I did medieval festival this year. I did a Strongman Show medieval festival. Never been there before. Never had any interest in it before.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. It's just not my thing. Honestly, well, you know what? I wonder if they're like a strongman show. You know, what's more medieval than a big dude covered in blue paint lifting stones? Right? Yeah, not too much more medieval than that. And I did that. I did 2 days of running big heavy stones, you know, like they did, you know, thousands of years ago. That's what men test themselves with.
Yeah.
Lifting stones. That was to test your manhood. So I did the manhood stones and, you know, it's pretty crazy. You look around at some of the things that are around you going, that's exactly how they lived. That's what they did. Mm. You know, some of the people take it pretty seriously up there. You know, so just the amount of history that our world has, you know, and you almost dial it straight back to the mental side of things as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then to now.
Yeah.
You know? I'm sure there was definitely a very different style of mental training, but it still was there. Yeah.
I find it really interesting. I was looking into the all the witch huntings way back in England and, you know, whatever else. And I find it interesting that mental health issues are on the rise nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And Like back then, I don't know whether you know much about the witch huntings.
Don't know much about the witch huntings.
Brutal.
I can imagine.
Like it would be something as simple as, I don't like you, so I'm going to tell this person you're a witch. And then it's a matter of they're going to come and torture you until you admit that you're a witch. And then...
you're dead anyway.
You're dead. So, you know, it's pretty much like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
So you got to be so careful just talking.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you've got to keep everyone on side, otherwise you're a goner.
Mm.
And, you know, I think back then everyone... it's interesting to me because back then it was so hard just to survive and now we've got everything.
That was, that was actually going to be my question to you.
Yeah.
About society now to society then. So with all the mental coaching and stuff you do, with all the training and stuff you do, is our society now weaker than ever before because of social media, because of lifestyle, because of everything easier to get? Are we a weaker society than we've ever been, or civilization than we've ever been mentally?
I'd have to have a think about it. I wouldn't say we're the weakest we've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that it's in a different form. Our strength is in a different form now.
Okay.
I don't believe that energy is ever lost or destroyed. It just changes form. Yep. So it either transforms or it transfers.
Okay.
So I wouldn't say that we're weaker. I would just say that our strength is elsewhere.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. But I do think that's why I love fighting so much, the combat sports, because I think that – and actually a friend of mine runs Strongheart Muay Thai.
Okay.
And he put up a post just the other day saying that, you know, men through history, they had to go out and hunt for their food. They had to – you know, they couldn't walk down – they couldn't walk to the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go out and they had to earn –
mm.
their food.
Mm.
Nowadays, we just have it handed to us. Mm. You know, it's right there. Mm. And so we're not made for that lifestyle. As human beings, are not made for that lifestyle. So combat sports is kind of the way of still maintaining that lifestyle just in a different format.
Exactly like strongman is now. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
I guess for us, we base a lot of our stuff off of our test of strength through time, because what is more testosterone going in manly than someone lifting something heavy?
Yeah.
You know, to prove to a mate, a female, look how big and strong I am.
Yeah.
I can protect you because I am the biggest, strongest male. Mm-hmm. The gorillas do it still. Yeah. You know, yep. It's still what we do. I thought I'd ask the question to see your answer. And yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. It does. It's just a different avenue of strength rather than, you know, maybe physically we might be not as strong, or mentally we might not be as strong, or something like that. But I just with everything being so easy to come by, and social media being, you know, huge for us as yourself running a podcast, myself as promotion for what I do, you have to have it. You have to have it.
Absolutely.
You have to have it. That's business. That's life. You know, you want to be pushing your product to the greater masses to help people. Social media is the way to do it. But at the same time, you sort of sit there going, what am I having to write in a letter?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of my friends, she's in the army. She's overseas at the moment, a chick I coach. She still writes letters.
Mm.
She's old school. She's old school. But, you know, because it's just personal.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Like you get, I've got a classic car. I've got a 1931 Cadillac. It's almost 100 years old. It's old. But I've been looking around for ages for one, like all around the world. This one I've got's the only one in Australia. But I've been trying to get in touch with people all around the country. I got given this phone number from a lady in Victoria. I won't say her name. And I said, look, can I please get some details on the car? I hear you have a car that was your husband's. He passed away. And she's like, yeah, you can even come over and see it. I said, okay. And this is when we had that real hot spell. Late last year. It was just hot. She said, look, it's a bit too hot to come over this time of year. I don't go outside that often, you know, maybe when it cools down. I said, yeah, cool, no worries. So I'll send you some photos and some stuff. I'm like, okay, do you need my email address? No, what's your address? I'm like,
oh.
Like she on the phone, she said she had to be into her 80s. Had to be.
Aww.
So she's written, seriously, she sent me 3 photos. She's like, can I please get the photos back because they're the only ones I have in the car. I said, of course, can.
Oh, bless.
So she's written in perfect cursive.
Oh.
The engine, the year it was made, the engine displacement, the gearbox, what's been done.
Oh, that just gave me goosebumps.
Keep going. I should have bought it. Everything. Here was when it was bought over. This is the shows we've been to, me and my husband went to. This is the awards it's won. Blah, blah, blah. This is how long it's sat here for. And she sent it to me and I got it and I was like, oh, that's awesome. You know, but you just don't get that anymore.
Yeah.
And that generation, not to be horrible, is dying out.
Yeah,
That's why I don't mind having the car because it's old and keeps me reminded of that era. Yeah. But 1931 means it's almost 90 years old.
Wow.
So that, like I said, that car, unless you were, it was owned by a family member, you didn't buy that car new, really.
Yeah.
No one really bought that car new. You'd have to be born in the late 1800s to buy that car new, or early 1900s, and they're not alive anymore.
Yeah.
That generation is starting to weather down more and more and more.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny like that.
It's interesting because society, I find that we've lost quality of connection in terms of that effort, but we've gained quantity of connection.
Absolutely. So fantastic. Again, cool.
The energy is not lost or destroyed. It's just changed form.
Yeah, absolutely. The quantity. Absolutely. When, what was it? What was I watching on what family? I'm trying to remember that real rich family. They're meant to be the richest family in the world. Rothschilds.
Yeah.
How they got word back from the about the war with Napoleon, that he'd lost the war before anyone had found out. But that was by, like, carrier pigeon.
Mm.
Like, the only time you'd ever find out news is in the newspaper or letter or news on TV at 6 o'clock.
Mm.
Besides that, you had no clue what was going on. Mm. Now, geez, you see the next second somebody falls over and you see it on Shit Adelaide.
Yeah.
You know, like... And to be honest, I've found myself on Shit Adelaide multiple times doing security work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was a naked guy at the hotel I worked at. He got naked on a table, so I dragged him off the table I ended up on Shit Adelaide. Me dragging this dude and dragging him out of the pub naked. Like, you know, it's just, and that was, I remember that night. I remember it well because we finished work. Oh, thank God that's over and done with. I've grabbed my phone. I've looked down and gone, why have I got like 30 mentions on Instagram for? And then, all you see is me just dragging this naked body out. I'm like, oh, for God's sake. It's just, quantity of anything is huge because we're going YouTube, millions of videos, which is great. Again, Dorian Yates talks about it on the Joe Rogan podcast about, when he was starting, you looked in books, guys that had come before you.
Mm.
Now everything's online.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy what's online these days.
I remember in primary school, it was like if you wanted to know about something, go to the library.
Yeah.
Go to the library, look it up in an encyclopedia or whatever, jump on their blocky kind of computers.
The old school laptop computers.
Yeah, and type in, your search and see what comes up, and then you had to go look for.
And it was always the blue background with the white writing or the black background, yellow white writing. Yeah. And you're it's in this section because it says section up the top and it's like UV765. You're like, okay, so it's
And then you have to scan along.
You're sitting there, what the fuck?
Now
and
it's
then you
like,
find out it's been just rented out and you're like,
Now it's like before the podcast, you're like, just Google, Qantas, Jordan, there it is.
Yeah, that's it. It's so accessible.
And I'm here going, oh, the internet's shit here. Like it's taking more than 10 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, again, that's a show of society in a good way and a bad way.
Mm.
But that's like anything in time. Look at the improvements we've had with everything, with health and well-being and all that type of stuff. And I guess at the same time, we have a whole lot of, a lot of the people are being a lot more cushioned now as well. But
now, and with so much information at our fingertips, it fucking floors me that people still say they can't do something.
Oh.
You have everything you need in a little handheld device, no bigger than, 10 centimeters by.
You can't do it because you can't be fucked to do it.
Exactly, exactly.
Don't wait.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know how to do that. Fucking Dr. Google.
Yeah, just go on Google and ask. It'll tell you what to do. Yeah. You don't know what to do. And that goes back to what we were saying before. Ask someone.
Mm, yeah. I mean, I used to be heaps into music when I was younger. Mm. And I used to play the saxophone.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going, man, I should really get back into it. And I've been telling myself the excuse of, I don't know any music teachers. Well, A, Fucking Google music teachers.
In my area.
B, Google on, YouTube how to play the fucking saxophone. Mm. Like, you can teach yourself off YouTube videos now. So I'm like, well, Brie, that's just your bullshit excuse not to do it, so.
Absolutely. Google saxophone teacher in my area, and it'll give it in your area.
Yeah.
It's not even like a broad search.
Yeah.
It'll give it right within, like, 10Ks of where you live.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Exactly.
What is it, the generation of technology or the... generation of information?
Yeah, age of information.
Age of information,
yeah.
That's what the one.
Yeah.
We are definitely the age of information.
Oh, definitely.
That is for sure.
So to bring it all together, what drives you to, like, the history stuff? What is there something that drives you to want to know about that stuff that you're conscious of?
I guess a lot of my things have been just from role models in my family. My mum is probably my biggest role model. Everything she does is just awesome. So, like... She's an Order of Australia medalist for her work with the dental community with the homeless.
Wow.
So my mum, I'd be here for hours if I listed up everything she has. So she's a dental teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She works in special needs. She works at the TAFE and the university. And she runs an outreach program for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So she set up a program where the homeless people can come get their teeth checked and all that type of stuff. And that's done in the middle of the city. Along with teaching students at Uni and TAFE, doing dentistry still for special needs. If people think I work hard, I don't work a day in my life compared to her. So I guess, maybe that's where I probably got my love for helping people. It's probably from my mum. Again, without her, I wouldn't be who I am today. My love of history comes from my grandfather, I'd say. So my grandfather was the one that used to take me to watch the Beta Birdwood every year. So I'd sit and watch all the old cars drive past, I did the Beta Birdwood last year, my first time ever with a car.
I've never been to it.
So that's something we have to change next year.
Yes.
So next year they've got the Beta Birdwood, which is the original. So this year's the classic.
Yeah.
So my car's too old to do the classic, but I can do the original.
Yep.
So I'll do the original one next year, so you might have to come for it.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I would have got that from him. I just like old school styling. I love old school. I love the clothing. I love the style. I just like how life was just more simple.
Yeah.
Like jumping in a car like mine is just different.
Yeah.
That's why I got the car, so I can just go to a different place to get out of my life.
Yeah.
Not to run away from it, but just to break it down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like
we were saying, you learn something new from stepping outside of the norm.
That's it. So, that was probably where I got my love of history from and knowledge. Because, again, I was probably one of the worst students at school. I just never rocked up. I was a turd, doing stupid shit like all young guys do. But I guess once I've sort of finished school, I just learned more about, loving history, loving what happened before me, what had happened to make us who we are now. So yeah, I have to say to thank my grandfather and my grandparents for that, But like I said, I'm just so lucky to have the team I have around me. My managers, my PR people, my engineers, my friends from my car club, my family, people that want me to do their podcasts like yourself. I'm a very lucky person to be able to do these things, to be able to voice my opinion and have conversations with people and talk about it more and more and more. So, yeah, like I said, I think a lot of it's luck, but sometimes you make your own luck.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think, what's the quote? If you want more luck, take more chances. Mm. Something along those lines. I love it, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
Chocolate ice cream. Yeah, I bet you didn't see that one coming, did you? Nah. No, look, to anyone that hears this podcast and listens in, I want to say thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been great. I've probably gone 4 hours over time. Probably wanted to talk to me.
This is probably the longest podcast I've ever done, which is brilliant.
I just think if anyone hears this, just... you're going to have the voices inside your head telling you one thing or another, and really find that thing that makes you special and really just hold on to it, drive forward, put a good group of people around you that can help you, and just keep learning, because you'd be surprised what you can learn from people. And keep that mental game strong.
Hell yeah.
You'll be fine. But again, like I said, thank you very much for having me on.
My pleasure. Do you have any social media links you want to share with everyone?
Too many. So I've got my Instagram, which is Jordan_Biggie, or King of the Circus. So that's going to be my fringe show next year, is the King of the Circus, going old school strongman style.
Yeah.
So you feel free to jump on my Instagram. There's always something being updated on there. My Facebook is Jordan Biggie Strongman, or Jordan Biggie Stefan Strongman. King of the Circus is on there as well. So, yeah, and then I've got my webpage as well, kingofthecircus.com.au. Please, I hope I got that wrong. Maybe I'll just give you the link and you can put that up there as
well. Yeah, I always put them in the podcast description.
Yeah, so, yeah, feel free to jump on and check them out. All my charities I work with are on there as well. And if you want to learn more about what I do with charities and who I help out, please feel free to jump on and, yeah, check it out.
Beautiful. Good stuff.
Thank you.
So there we have it. Now, in closing, the standard invitation for any of you who want to check out what I'm up to in the world with the Live Free group. Of course, we've got the Live Free Academy, which is an educational platform for athletes, entertainers, entrepreneurs, and influencers to learn the back end of their craft. So looking at things like legalities, contract negotiation, networking, PR and marketing, you know, how to monetize your dream. You can find all of that at www.thelivefreeacademy.com.au and on Facebook and Instagram at The Live Free Academy. Or if you want to hit us up directly, you can do so by emailing hello@thelivefreeacademy.com.au. If you want to know a little bit more about my mindset coaching and consulting practice through the Live Free Movement, you can, of course, find us on both Facebook and Instagram at The Live Free Movement. The Live Free Experience, the podcast, of course, has our own little Instagram platform. So just search The Live Free Experience. And finally, if you want to follow my personal journey, you can do so by searching Brianna Bowley on either Facebook or Instagram. That's spelled BRIANABOWLEY. And until next time, what else is possible?